Welcome to the refinery. This is our first episode of existence, I guess. Let me start out by saying what we are and who we are and why we're here. Back at the beginning of the year, three grassroots conservative groups, we got together, and this is the Conservative Union, Free Radical Network, and the Party of Choice. We got together to start talking through messaging issues and Senate races and to try to find a way that we could be more active and we could grow the movement a little bit more, come up with better messaging, be more effective ourselves at being conservatives, and just in general make a difference and figure stuff out. And so we've had these weekly meetings where we toss ideas out and come up with some really brilliant things, if I may say so myself. And all of these hangouts have been, like available to the public. It's not like they've been unlisted or anything, but we haven't been doing any promotion of them because it's kind of an internal meeting or, this isn't like a radio show we're broadcasting. This is more of an invitation for you to hang out with us in our salon where we discuss the issues of the day and how to make the world a better place. This is Yes, it's like our salon. And I'm Leslie Price. I'm Leslie P on Conservative Union. Conservative Union is a community on Google Plus with about 5,200 people in it. And we've stretched out from there, and we have a Facebook page and Twitter account and stuff like that. And then we also partner with and cross promote the works of Free Radical Network and the Party of Choice. And I'll let you guys introduce yourselves and what you guys do, and then we'll just go from there. So, JD?
Hi, everybody out there. I'm NJ Libertarian, NJ underscore Libertarian on Twitter. I write stuff for Free Radical Network, and I've been the head interviewer guy here at I guess we're going to say the refinery did those interviews too with Brian Goldberg and Rich Pezulla, and I will be interviewing Jeff Bell tomorrow, who is an actual Senate candidate for the Republican Party here in the state of New Jersey, tomorrow at 12:45 Eastern Standard Time, which is going to be fun.
There you go. And to clarify the Conservative Union kind of ownership of this deal, it's because we have a YouTube channel and because we have the community. It's these three organizations, we're all equals in this, but because we have the, I guess, the technical infrastructure, we're using it. We're using our home base and, that little torch logo and stuff. This is not a Conservative Union production. It's all three of our organizations coming together. And this meeting, we decided we needed a name for our little salon meetings, and that's the refinery, and that's about it. But it'll all be hosted at the Conservative Union. Fishy, you want to talk about yourself a little bit?
I'm good. I'm good. No, I think JD encapsulated just about everything. From Free Radical Network, our slogan has been, "Don't get comfortable." We're looking for solutions rather than just rants, and we like tackling problems and trying to figure out the best way to message things, to handle things, and we sort of like being, one of the legs of this stool that we have here. Oh, did I say stool? I probably
We say
shouldn't have said it
stool
that
every
way.
episode.
But one of the props of this refinery, because we have forged some really great relationships with conservatives, we didn't know we're out there. And all of us have the goal of growing the movement and spreading our philosophies, our values, as far as we can. And so we have sort of a multiplying effect by joining together. I guess instead of two rings, it's three. I don't know. But working together, I think, makes us stronger.
And now to you, Corey and Andy.
Well, we're Corey and Andy Pate,
Hi.
and we started the Party of Choice. And if you're a conservative, you're already in the Party of Choice because conservatives want people to have more choices, whereas liberals wanted to take choices away from people. And so what we do is we train conservatives in how to effectively explain their beliefs to those who may not already be conservative by reframing issues using a choice versus control perspective, which makes the right the good guys and the left the bad guys. The other thing that we do is we're working on building a coalition, which is why we're here, to unite the right, because it's our desire to help people understand that they have a lot more in common than they realize, and that we can work together without selling out our principles.
Pretty impressive group we've got here.
You know, we should have, I'm sorry, again, we should have written something. Clearly those guys, you know, they're pros at this. They get asked to go places and give speeches and things. So.
Off the top of her head, I was going to say.
No way.
I am here for the food.
Wow.
Yeah, that was off the top of her
head. Well,
that's awesome.
At the GOP state convention, I got to say that spiel about 8,000 times in one day. That's why it's smooth.
Yep. See?
It's practice, I see.
Well, and that brings up a very good point to start discussion with, because that is what you want to be able to do as a conservative, to refine your message so clearly that without having to resort to notes, you can quickly and clearly explain what it is that you're about, what it is that you want to accomplish. And Corey had mentioned this at the event that she was at, doing this in 15-second sound bites all day long. It refined what their message was, and it was so clear that other people could hear her give this spiel and pick up on it and be able to do the same. It was contagious, and so that is two very important parts of what we're trying to do globally together.
Well, yeah, practice makes perfect. Corey practices for hours in front of the mirror. She doesn't actually say anything.
Oh!
But
she doesn't have to. She's gorgeous.
This was going so well. You nailed me. I was brilliant.
If it isn't obvious to anyone yet, this isn't a show. This is us just talking and figuring out what we're talking about this week. I do want to specify, we try to keep things PG. We don't always succeed. I'm usually the first violator. We all have a little bit of that 12-year-old boy in us, so when anyone starts talking about the three-legged stool, there is generally a giggle.
You laugh at something one time, and then everybody thinks, oh my God. And we also we try to keep spousal abuse at a minimum. Spousal abuse, we try and keep that
at a minimum, not totally eliminated, but at a minimum. And we expect that we might have some guests come on eventually. Who knows? We generally have some topics that each of us maybe brings to the meeting. Oh, this week I want to talk about, but we go off topic a lot because we just kind of get excited and do what we and talk about what needs talking. And there's usually a lot of that. So, Corey and Anita, y'all have a thing coming up this coming weekend, or no?
Yeah,
Unite the Right stuff this weekend?
Well, Unite the Right is in 2 weeks. We're doing Choice Words That Win this Saturday. And I posted it, I tagged it to the Conservative Union, and I have no idea if I did it right. But it's going to be from 1 to 4 up in Westminster, Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're going to do is we're taking four of the hot topics, the war on women, school choice, unions, and taxing the rich, and we're going to teach people how to break those issues down. We're going to start off with what is the argument, what is the strength of the left's argument, how do we undercut it, and then what are ineffective answers and effective answers, and help people really understand how to break those issues down. And then taking those steps, we're planning on having them break into groups and choose an issue that's important to them and reframe it. And then Andy's also going to be talking about Unite the Right, I think, a little bit.
They want me to do a little Unite the Right. Probably the biggest difference in what we're going to be doing than what people usually hear is that we're not just going to be listing out talking points. What we do first is that we equip people to tear down the wall that's between us conservatives and a lot of Americans. You know, when you say you're a Republican or a conservative, they initially lurch back.
Right.
They put up a wall. And so what I do is I explain to them why people don't want to listen to you. What is the idea they have about you? What is the stigma? And how do you very quickly, in a few seconds, break it down, tear it down, and start over with them. So first we show them how to really quick understand the wall that's between them and the others, how to really quick break it down, and then they can have, we'll get into, you know, the chess playing of talking points, what works, what doesn't on a certain topic and why. So that's kind of what we'll be doing. It's a lot of fun. I mean, it's just a lot of fun talking. You hear a lot of great ideas from the crowd. It's not just all your own. It's really cool.
Are you going to do some, like, I remember what we talked about last week was coming up with ways to message or even meme the class warfare from our perspective, how, you know, liberal policies that don't, they promote liberal policies that don't affect themselves, but that do affect us. How we were going to try to figure out how do we meme that their ideas hurt us kind of thing. Hopefully you're going to answer that question and give us our memes and you'll do all the work for us.
Well, what I'm here to do is all the work for you.
Pose the question and make the attendees do the work.
We're going to be doing, we'll be hitting a lot of the taxing the rich. Why do people want to raise taxes on the rich? Why is that a control thing, what they're trying? Because when people try to raise taxes on the rich, what they're trying to do is control the charity of others. Okay. And so you help people understand, well, how would you like it if your charity was controlled? Because that's what you're doing. If they gave all they had to the charities you like, you wouldn't be trying to take more from them. So that's what they're doing. So what we do is we're going to train them on all levels, probably from about four or five different directions, on why going after the wealthy, redistribution of wealth, is wrong. It's not just, you know, not just ineffective and bad for you, but it's immoral and it's deconstructive, it's destructive, it's terrible. And so we'll be hitting it from a lot of ways. But yeah, also what you were saying, absolutely. A lot of these things that are advanced, be it environmental issues, you know, green energy versus oil and gas and stuff like this, are advanced by wealthy leftists who won't be affected at all by what's being advanced. Everything that's being advanced affects the people they're conning. So yeah, we'll definitely go into that.
Excellent. Okay, we have a technical issue, and this is good because this is going to help us work through it too if we can get Landon in to be able to see and hear. Has he tried the two links that are in that Facebook post, the two links that I posted in there?
I don't know, but I did direct him to the YouTube page, so hopefully he's getting it there because I mean I can see it just fine on the YouTube channel. I just checked, so
okay.
Hopefully that works for him.
Okay.
The question I had is whether the comments that would show up in the G+ view
event
are the same as would show up on YouTube.
I don't think so. Think we end up with multiple different comment streams. There's the Google Hangout. I mean, there's the Google Plus event that has comments. There's chat, which is just us. There's the Q&A that I've got open on my other computer. So if anybody were to post a question via the official Q&A app on the Hangout, I would see that. And then there's, I guess, comments on YouTube, which we would have to open YouTube. It really is a complete mess the way Google
Hangouts.
It's
difficult to get people's comments from outside the Hangout.
Yes.
And that is what I'm hoping that we're monitoring. If we've gone public, then I want to make sure that we have the ability to take questions if there are, so
right,
that someone's monitoring those.
Right, and that's why I've got, like I said, I've got the Q&A app up on my desktop, and, you know, chat for us, but I don't know if anybody's going to do that. There is in the Hangout Toolbox app on the Hangouts, there's one of the apps on it is supposed to be a way to merge Twitter and Facebook and all of the different Google comments. I've never taken the time to try to make that work, and I've heard pros and cons about it. And as soon as I figure it out, Google will change something. It is kind of a mess. Oh, look, there's a hello question. Select. Did you do that, Fishy? Yay, that's JD.
What?
Yeah, that was me. I just checked to see that everything was working and that. So yes, the answer is everything is working, and we're trying to monitor the comments and stuff. But
yeah, I think
Google
for now
Plus is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's just better than the rest of the other.
Google is right. It's horrible except for all the other ones. I can't get either to work well, and this is Larry. Can't get either what? And see, on the Q&A app, I can read his questions, and then I can talk about them. We can talk about them here, but I can't type an answer because it's not actually a chat. It's so bizarre and frustrating.
Mental notes to pass on to Google.
Yeah. And there are no comments going on in the YouTube yet. So
okay, well, if you're monitoring that,
you monitor YouTube. I've got the Q&A app. If somebody can monitor the Google event page, Fishy, can you do that?
Link me and I'll do it. That'd be faster than me looking for it.
Yeah, I got it. I'll get it to you.
Okay.
This is a blast right now.
Yeah.
Because as opposed to previous weeks when basically all we were doing was just talking and like, you know, talking about messaging, doing the actual stuff. Now we have other things to think about and monitor, which is always fun. But talking about messaging, we did talk a little bit about it last week, since the details were a little bit worked out for the Jeff Bell interview, but right now I have my list of questions all ready to go. Just curious if anybody else has anything else to add to the questions that I just added to the original list. We have questions about getting out the vote, which is something we talked about last week. Down ballot elections, how important it is as a Senate candidate to support down-ballot elections, down-ballot races, I should say, talking about Chris Christie's success and how Jeff might be able to, figure out how to create a path in New Jersey to success by trying to utilize some of Chris Christie's success.
Figure out what it was that made Christie so successful that can map to Jeff's personality. I mean, obviously,
exactly.
It's not going to be Chris Christie. Okay, and I've got a question from Larry. He's got YouTube working, but Google isn't playing the video. JD, you got YouTube up?
I am watching the video right now.
Don't you love it when tech support answers your question with "works fine for me"?
It works. That's absolutely what I'm seeing. I'm seeing it, and
it was working for me as well. So
maybe if you've got AdBlock Plus or something like that, maybe no, that probably wouldn't do it. I honestly don't know. Check to see if your Flash is plugged in. He can't hear me. He can't hear me, so it doesn't help.
No, you would have to send a message.
But he's obviously logged into Google Plus because the G Plus Q&A app knows who he is, Larry Hedman.
Yeah, he probably should be. You know, that's weird. I don't know why he wouldn't be able to see the video.
Episode 1: Technical issues discussed for an hour.
That's most.
But you know what? That's real.
Yeah, that happens. That's pretty much. I've been on the first episode of a bunch of different shows, and this is
the way it works.
Of course. Yes, this isn't even the worst that I've dealt with. So, this is a good sign. This is a good start thus far.
Okay, then I'll trust you on that. And so your interview with Jeff is tomorrow, noonish.
Tomorrow,
12:45.
12:45. Yep. Eastern
your
time. Yes.
Okay.
So
you wouldn't really quote prices times in my time zone. I mean, you like me and everything, but you're not insane.
Central time doesn't actually exist. It's a figment. It's a mass hallucination of the center of the country. There's Pacific time, and then there's Eastern Standard Time. Everything else is just no one cares about.
That was
wrong. I'm reaching for the sound effects on the Hangout Toolbox, and I'm going to gong you.
Oh, great.
That was probably Texasist of you.
Yeah, it was. I am admittedly a Texasist person.
You're just a hater. Hater,
yes,
hater.
I am.
Hater. I wanted to talk about something that kind of occurred to me yesterday, in fact.
Cool.
As I was driving over to my sister's house to spend time with my grandnephew, who is awesome, by the way, 6 weeks premature, and now he's like 13 days past his due date, and he's just the most beautiful, perfect baby the planet's ever seen. But I could be biased. I don't know. Anyway, as I was driving, Mockleberry was on the radio, and he was ranting as usual about getting people to actually speak their mind and to speak out and speak up and, you know, to not just forward an email to your friends who agree with you, but to actually have the courage to speak up about your political opinions to people who don't agree with you, and to have the courage to do that. And listening to that and realizing that there are out there still a lot of people who don't have the courage to talk about politics at work because they're maybe the only conservative, or they've been intimidated by all of the intimidation that's been going on. I mean, they've actually fallen for it. And that's by design. The leftists want us to be too intimidated to speak out. And we know that. And I kind of connected that to some of the pushback that we get when we all start talking about messaging and the right way to talk about something, or a more helpful way to talk about something, and we get pushback from people on our side that we are giving in and we're not truth warriors and all of this kind of thing. We're watering down the message and we don't understand and blah, 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 blah. And it occurred to me that perhaps the problem is we're in different places and we're not really understanding each other. The people who are bitching at us may still be in step two of their political coming out. You know, step one was they discovered that they are conservative, and step two, they create an anonymous account on social media and they talk politics. And so they're at step two, and they kind of have to talk with the fervor of the recently converted, but they're only doing it on social media, and they're testing the waters and they're trying to build up their own courage. And then they see us, and we're at step three, which is once you've decided you're conservative and you've decided to speak out about it, you put your own name, you put your own face, and you say it in a helpful way. And I think I'm thinking that maybe some of the people who are pushing back on us and some of our more marketable messaging are people who are still at step two.
I think you're right for the most part. A lot of what we see in internet discussion, just for lack of a better term, is based out of, I think, two things. The first is fear.
Mm-hmm.
Conservatives have felt under attack for so long, and
legitimately so.
Right, because the culture is changing and things around them are changing, and they don't know anybody who's really liberal, and you know, other conservatives, they don't know people that are really liberal, but they get these messages coming, you know, in an onslaught from mass media, and they feel under attack. And I get that. The second thing is the way that the right glorifies and has done our outspoken, daring messengers. And mm-hmm. they think, and we talked about this a few weeks ago when we were saying, using Kurt Schlichter as an example, the way that he behaves on Twitter. Kurt's an expert and has been doing it a long time. Rush Limbaugh is an expert on the radio and has been doing it a long time. Even Mark Levin has been on the radio and doing it a long time. And they have their audiences, but they're not going to get audiences by being reasonable and finding the better way to say things. That's not their intent. Michael Berry will tell you, you know, this isn't about civic duty and all that. This is about ratings. And he has said that multiple times on his show. So we have people taking their lessons from folks who don't have to actually engage productively.
And now the YouTube stream that nobody's watching now because you just insulted Rush Limbaugh and Mark Levin. So everybody's gone. They all left.
I think anyone reasonably thinking through that issue will understand.
She wasn't insulting them.
Between ratings.
I didn't think so.
between writings and between the fact that these are not people whose task it is to be missionaries out in conversion territory. They are people who are preaching in the pulpit to the converted. And
correct.
There's a place for that.
They're needed. They are absolutely necessary.
But the point is, you cannot use the same language that everyone in church already understands, the phraseology, when you go into an unchurched territory. It's the same concept. You can't talk about, transubstantiation? I don't even remember all the words that go with that. You can't explain that unless you've got a basis for it. And talking to people that don't speak that language, it doesn't compute. It just goes right over their head. They miss it. So we've got people who are pep rally leaders, and then we've got people who are needing to learn how to be missionaries, and they're just two different jobs.
Well, you know, I mean, oh, go ahead, JD. You were
going to say. No, I was just going to say that you're entirely right, that the guys who should be missionaries are giving sermons, and there's too many sermons for mission. You know, there's a lot of confusion in the division of labor when it comes to messaging on the right. Sorry, go ahead, Andy.
No, I want to interrupt real quick and comment on what Landon said on the Q&A. He saw Fishy laugh when I mentioned Michael Berry. That's because Fishy knows that every time I have a story that starts out with me driving, I'm going to say something about Michael Berry.
And it's not Michael Berry. It's not Michael Berry. It's Mike Berry.
Mike Berry. Yes. It's one word.
So yeah, that's
of course,
that
and of course nobody knows who Michael Berry is if they're not from Texas or around Texans. So
dude is on the radio in Oregon. I'm just telling you.
He's on the radio in Oregon.
And Nashville, I believe.
And in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Yes.
Those aren't real places anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Such a bigot. Such a New Jersey bigot. Love you, JD. But yes, so Landon obviously quite perceptive. He caught Fishy laugh, rolling her eyes and like, oh God, here comes a Michael Berry story again. Not the first one, won't be the last. But okay, sorry about that, Andy. Go ahead.
I have to have a good cry first. No, I mean, you know, I really like the church analogy because here's a real, you actually have the same problem in the church as you have in the Republican Party. And that is, you got a lot of people whipping up the crowd and nobody equipping the crowd to go out and explain why they actually believe what they believe.
Ooh, good.
And so the people in the crowd and equipping the Republican Party and the pews of conservatism and the pews of the Tea Party and the pews of the Libertarian Party and the pews of my group, the Christian Right, none of them can explain to somebody why they should basically convert, why somebody should become a conservative, why they would want to vote this way. And I happen to be a big fan of Sarah Palin. I think she was a fantastic governor. But when is the last time Sarah has said anything that equipped anyone to turn around and win someone?
Or it is how we baptize terrorists.
Exactly. You see, and that's just it. Right now we've got an incredibly ill-equipped conservatism. And that is because all we've got are the big voices, but the big voices are entertaining. They are whipping us up. They're also informing us. They're even informing us on various issues, and that's great. What they're not doing is equipping us at all. And let me tell you something. On the left, you get equipped. You get equipped to take people apart rhetorically.
Well, I think that goes back, too, to the hesitance, maybe, or the squidginess that conservatives have around talking points, as mm-hmm. though they were bad because we learned about them during the Clinton administration, where, you know, everything was just about talking points. Rush Limbaugh put that word out and everybody got scared of it. But the point is, you do have to know and defend what you're talking about, whatever your position is, and the better rehearsed and the more thought you've put into it and the more angles you've looked at it from, the better able you are to communicate. And we have not taught people that it's okay to use talking points. And the second thing I think that we find is a whole reluctance to choose better words or choose better phrasing, because if you're speaking the truth, then of course everyone is going to have that hallelujah moment, and the truth is going to go out and accomplish things for you. It doesn't matter, they think, how you package that, but only that you say truth, and then it will go forth and accomplish things, kind of like Christians believe that the Word of God has power in it. I will tell you that conservative positions are not scripture, however. They don't have that power.
Yes, they are.
Yes, they are. You're not a true con, Rhino.
You just raise up the Texas Republican Party platform, and it acts as a bulwark against all illegal immigrants. Yes,
you're talking about the religion that has brought me to forgive you for so much. I don't understand why that isn't just wonderful and full of joy.
But honestly, I think I've seen this so often in the conservative movement, where people believe that whatever the power of their words are, whether it's talking about the Constitution or invoking the Founding Fathers, you know, quotes or whatever, that those words will simply penetrate, and that it doesn't matter how you put that together. But at the same time, we have no problem in understanding the need to advertise products all throughout our society.
And we understand that the big successful companies, when they have a new product rolling out, they will send talking points to all of their employees. They will have a consistent message that they deliver about what the product is and what its advantages are, and everybody says the same thing. And that way, you know, if anybody is asked, you're all selling the same value of this product and this, and we understand this, and we're in business and we do this in our professional lives. But when it comes to politics, we go all retarded and think that, you know, my passion and my truth and whatever phrase I want to say it, and anybody who doesn't agree with me is stupid. And yeah, it is. The lack of equipping is kind of the reason why Tea Party candidates are generally so terrible. Yes, Landon, that's absolutely, I think, a lot of it. We don't cultivate candidates. I mean, you look at what Battleground Texas is doing in Texas right now at the grassroots level. They're not just signing up voters. They're signing up candidates, and they're bringing those candidates in, and they're equipping them with ways to be an effective candidate, how to go out, who to talk to, how to talk to them. And right, then we're going to see a lot of really powerful Democrat candidates in Texas in a few years, because the Democrats equip their people, and we don't. We've got to learn how.
Well, you know, go ahead, Jay.
Oh, I was just going to say that's one of the more frustrating things that I've come across and something that you see frequently when it comes to internet discussions. And you know, we talk about how, you know, the comparative value, and that's not really a big deal to have discussions on social media platforms too often, you know, discussing directly with liberals. But something that you encounter a lot is big blog posts, walls of text that are dropped in on, you know, if you are an unskilled person when it comes to discussing your ideology, if you're just a conservative and you're trying to defend yourself, and then somebody drops a big wall of text on you, and these you know, this is, it's not just that they are learned on these topics, that they have this information, but it is easily accessible, that they can just point and click, drop it on you, and there's their argument, and you don't, you know, you're screwed. And that happens a lot, and it's mm-hmm. just on all fronts we are losing this battle.
Well, you know, yeah, you know, it really frustrates me too. I know a lot of Republicans who are like, they get so frustrated, and because they say the Democrats are just too well-trained, they're too well-organized. And I look at them, I'm just like, no, they're trained and they're organized. They're morons. If we do what they do, even a little, we're going to kill them. Their points are ludicrous. I'm a former Democrat. I can guarantee you, many of the Democrats know their points are just indefensible. They don't care about right and wrong. They only want to control people's lives. And so, you know, it just blows my mind that we get intimidated by some of the most mentally bankrupt and, you know, intellectually bankrupt positions imaginable. You know, real quick, what Fishy was saying earlier, remember, you know, first stage, second stage, third stage, conservatives and so forth. And, you know, I think the difference between the second and the third stage, Fishy, is that by the third stage, we simply realize a number of verbal strategies that don't work. And we admit it. We say, this doesn't work in this situation. You can't say that in that situation. And people who are still in the second, tell them that.
I think that's true, because they're just... And we need to find a way to bring them into stage three. And that, I get so frustrated. And Fishy and I don't even remember what the topic was, but it was something. And Fishy kept going with this guy, and he was on our side, but he was all about how watering down the message. And I was screaming at my computer, and I had to walk away, and Fishy kept at it and kept trying to bring this guy around, and he would not budge off of his adamance that marketing is bad, marketing is wrong, and, you know, I'm going to state my position exactly the way I can. We were unable to bring that guy up to stage three, and you know, I think he even is one of those ones like I was talking about. He's got probably an anonymous profile, and he probably doesn't talk politics to anyone in his real life because he's not necessarily there yet, and we need to find a way to help get them there.
And I think there's been a lack of that in this movement, a lack of emphasis on that across the board, because the kind of, well, just a couple of weeks, Leslie and I attended TX Online, held by Americans for Prosperity Texas, and there was a lot of discussion around messaging and around how to package things so that they're easily digestible and using the right phrases here and there, attempting not to alienate audiences that you want to reach. And that's not typical of the subject matter at other conferences that I've attended. It's not something we focus on because, again, we have our superstars who are out there with red meat messaging, which does a fine job of energizing our people, but we don't take them to the next task, which is being able to go out there and convert people into the conservative column who are apolitical. We don't ever stress equipment like that, whereas the church analogy, you do have to train before you go out into the mission field.
I think that's a really good comparison of training them to go out on mission, because we do want the conservatives that we speak with to, you know, we're aware of all the issues, and we're bringing, not all the issues, but a lot, and we're distilling things down to the pertinent points so the people who read the stuff that we post, they're able to save themselves some time, and we're their trusted advisors, and they read the stuff we post, and I want to give them not just the information, not just the news of the day, but give it to them in a way that they can repeat to their apolitical spouses, friends, and family. And what I see so often is more of a desire to focus on the issue rather than to focus on understanding the content of the messaging and understanding the way the message is delivered. Because I'll write posts about, you know, this is an example of this kind of messaging, and all the commentary is about the issue.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, I think, too, a lot of times we're so intent on getting our points out there because we've studied them so hard and we want to spill them all over the place, and then the person that you just dumped it on is, like, freaking out and their eyes are popping out of their head. I've done that to people.
No, never.
We need to remember that sometimes we need to just ask them what they think about an issue and not share our opinion. Find out what they think and listen. I mean, mean, goodness gracious, see this person every day at work. It's not like there's never going to be another chance to talk about Obamacare or
But what if they're wrong?
Somebody's wrong on the internet.
How are you going to know how to persuade them if you don't know what they think?
You know, I always tell people to listen to people and listen hard. Find something you will agree with.
That's so true.
Agree with, because that is the second you tell them you agree with something, immediately, I talk about the wall, immediately a part of that wall comes down. And what I do is I always get people, you know, because I always think in terms of choice, control, the left is into control. I'll say, what do you think on this issue and why? And maybe they'll say, I happen to be pro-life, they're pro-choice, and they'll say why they're pro-choice on abortion. And I'll wait until you'll always hear it at some point in their explanation of why they believe what they believe. They will say how they don't want to be controlled, or they don't want somebody else to be controlled. I jump on it and say, I agree. Look, I even if we don't hold the same view, I love the reason you hold that view. You don't want the government telling you what to do with your body. You don't want the government telling this person what to do with their lifestyle. You don't want the government telling you what you can smoke. You don't want the government, hey, I agree with that, okay? And then what that does is it you bond for a moment, and then you can walk together and say, but how do we apply this to make sure that your choices don't take away somebody else's?
Well, Andy makes a great point, too, because firstly, no one wants to be preached at, and we have a very bad habit on the right of doing that, just talking. And when you do listen, you do find that key that might open up a conversation that you didn't otherwise earn with them. And it's earning the conversation. But secondly, every speech class that I've ever taken, and I was a speech major for a while, every single one of them, every sales presentation, every training that you'll get on, and it brings us back, of course, to marketing and messaging, but every one of them will tell you that you have to start by finding out what somebody, what they need, or what their, you know, what their key is, or what their motivator is. You go into the person you're trying to message. You don't just start broadcasting without a care of who's listening. It's not a broadcast when you're messaging to somebody. It's a communication back and forth, and you've got to listen. So many of us want to have our say, but they don't want to have the second step and listen to better find out what they can say. We are miserably short on people who can do that.
Yeah. But what about watering down your message? Aren't you going to water down your message if you specify your argument to a specific person? Isn't that just the worst faux pas ever? By the way, where's that? That's an article that needs to be put into the stream so that people can see it.
You know, the biggest thing that I hear from people is we can't water down our message. We can't do that, or we should. You know, they argue back and forth, and I'm like, guys, first of all, we're putting the cart before the horse. Because most people don't even know what you're talking about to begin with. So you have to back it up a few steps and explain the things that you take for granted as being normal, because those people have never heard it before, especially young people. They are surrounded and indoctrinated by school, by their teachers, by their profs, by Hollywood, by social media. And so if you take it back a couple of steps and you explain the basic points first, then the light bulbs go off, and then you can go into whatever your message is, and you don't have to water anything down at all. They get it. It's just they don't know where you're coming from.
And additionally, as you know, Gawkor, this is brilliant, when you let them talk a little bit about their reasonings and you find out how they've been programmed, you can find the key to unprogram them.
Right.
The first thing is, when you start out, you're facing them, you're in opposition to them. You use Andy's trick of find something to agree with them on, and that allows you to step, you do a 180 and you step alongside them, and now you're shoulder to shoulder headed the same direction with the person. You're not in opposition to them, you're walking alongside them. And then as you let them talk, you learn more about them, and yes, you find the way to target a message so that they will hear it. And this is advertising. This is marketing. And advertisers, you see a different ad for the same product when it's advertised on the Lifetime channel versus advertised on ESPN. It's the same damn product, though. And I think what we have is a lot of people on our side, the people who are in stage two, they think if you're customizing your message, you're changing the product. And they're terrified because they're just waking up and just seeing that the GOP is watering down the product.
Right.
So that GOP elected officials can stay elected. And that's what they're afraid you're doing when you're trying to customize your message. They're afraid that you are being a GOP elected official, being a Democrat light. And they're not seeing the difference between marketing the product and changing the product.
Well, yeah, I mean, they literally...
And I think it's their fear.
Yeah, the people in this stage two, I'd never heard it put that way. I kind of like that. The stage two ones, they actually take offense at the idea of finding areas of agreement. And I look at them and say, but I got to be honest, they come over pretty quickly when you explain it to them. Because I look at them and I say, look, guys, the area of agreement is you don't want to be controlled. You don't like people controlling your life. You don't like it. They don't like it. Find out where in their argument they're taking that position because they don't want to be controlled. Relate to that and then say, okay, but how can we make sure we're not controlling other people? How can we make sure our choices aren't taking away other people's choices? And now you can walk, like Leslie said, now you can walk together. You know, but you're right. A lot of people in the stage too, they think that's watering it down. They've actually take offense at finding areas of agreement. I tell them those are gold. Those are gold. You're mining for gold. When you listen to them, find areas of agreement. Jump on those, and because you've got those are the door in.
And it may just be fear and newness based. You know, if they're relatively new to social media, speaking politically, thinking politically, discovering what's going on, and sharing information and learning. You know, some of the skills of stage three people, and this is a fairly good short, abbreviation or abbreviated way for us to talk about it. But it makes me feel like I'm really arrogant. I'm at stage three, and you people are only on stage two.
you know what this means, right, Fishy? This means that you're going to have to write this, right? You're going to have to explain to people. You're going to have to figure that out and label it so that people know.
I need to ask, if I hit stage four, do I become translucent in some way? Or
I believe it's terminal.
We need to talk to Tom Cruise about that. Aren't there some? I don't even know the words from Scientology. Yes. Clearing,
his thetan count is very, very low. That Andy.
My midichlorian count. I mean, would that be
your midichlorian count is miserably low. Sorry.
That sucks.
No Jedi mind tricks from you.
I don't even want to be stage four. I'm soured on the whole idea.
Yeah, sadly, we don't get force lightning powers with our conservatism situation. No.
All I want to know is if we could achieve stage four, will we get some of that Coke money? Because if so, I want stage four, please.
That's for the higher up stages. You can't get that.
When does the Coke money start rolling in?
I'm reverting to stage one. Me conservative, you dummy head.
Yes.
That's actually, stage one is terminal conservatism because we lose all the time because of it.
And Fishy, what was that conversation about? It was so frustrating.
I think it had to do with the border influx and one of the, it could have been that, or it could have been a really nasty reaction that a Muslim reporter got at the Republican convention. I don't remember which one, but it was one of those two issues where people have difficulty messaging. I don't know, but I'll look it up because that was very frustrating.
It was very frustrating, and it was collect underpants. Yeah, the underpants gnomes are coming along. That Landon had just typed a Q&A, step one, collect underpants. Step two, question mark. Step three, profit. Yep. There we go. That's the magic process. And what's interesting is we're talking here about marketing and advertising, and we're bringing in human psychology. And if we use our powers for evil, we'll be manipulating people, because we're talking about, you figure out what your person's triggers are, so that you can, and what are their important issues, what are their problems, so that your message can solve their problems, and you can manipulate them into doing what you want them to do. And yeah, manipulation is the bad phrase for it. Persuasion is the exact same thing, but just not used for evil, I guess. And I kind of have no problem with, shouldn't we as our goal being better at manipulating voters?
The Democrats do it all the time, and they do it for worse reasons. I mean, it's something that we have to deal with I hate to say fight fire with fire, but we're also talking about liberty. We're talking about stuff that is actually good. We're not talking about handouts. We're not talking about socialism. We're talking about personal liberties. We're talking about freedom. So insofar as we would need to be manipulative, I don't think that speaking the same language as somebody is being manipulative. And I think that's what we're talking about, is talking to people in terms that they understand and can deal with and don't sound alien and foreign, like Mitch McConnell saying, I don't know, that we're the party of, what was it, of not entrepreneurism, but it was some ridiculous way of, instead of saying small business, when he could have said small business, the private sector, that's what it is. Oh, we're the party of the private sector. Yeah, okay.
Oh, God, read that in Federalist Paper number 143? I mean, come on.
Part of the, literally 1% is going to pay attention to Mitch McConnell when he says that we're the party of the private sector. It's ridiculous that we can't speak in terms that people understand, people can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
If you employ somebody, do you think, oh hey, I'm a member of the private sector? Is that what I'm? Is that what you are? If you're a job creator, you're a member of the private sector. That's what you're aspiring to be. I don't think so.
And we may denigrate the Democrats for doing so, but they have a real skill at distilling down an issue to very simple, often simplistic and overly simplistic messages.
And but it's repeatable and it's persuasive. And
yes.
Oh my God, it works.
But it's always the same, and we need to, rather than getting involved in our list of 50 talking points against their list of 50 talking points, we need to go to the heart of the issue, and that's this. On virtually every issue, their strategy is the same. Isolate a group for you to hate and then get you to help them take from that group and bring that group down. It can be wealthy people, white people, pharmaceutical companies, oil companies, the military, Christians, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Isolate, set up a villain, blame that villain for your life. Use a few isolated cases where only members of that group have done it, and then blame all of them together. Basically class warfare. So what I mean is this, their game is so simple, and all we got to do is look at people and say, look, what does each side want to turn you into? They want to turn you into somebody who preys on others out of bitterness, who finds enemies and gets them by using 51% of the vote. We want to turn you into somebody who excels as an individual and shows others how to do so also, not somebody who turns upon others to get what they have. We appeal to the better part of you. They appeal to the worst part of you and everyone.
And that's straight out of Thomas Sowell, too, that the left has mascots that they adopt, that they fight for, which puts them in a righteous position of being champions of the underdog. Meanwhile, all conservatives and conservative values and conservative policies cause those things, and therefore they're demonized and they are cast as the bad guys. I did find the issue, and I was wrong. It was neither of the two that I had mentioned. It was a piece of direct messaging put out by Human Rights Campaign, and it was
from the platform.
The shame on the Texas GOP. Gay people don't need a cure. Sign the petition, and then it's got hashtags and whatever.
Right.
The point was that the inclusion in the platform of language talking about reparative therapy for gays was seen as completely out of bounds by a lot of people. My personal feeling was it had no business being there. It didn't help the cause. It was a defensive measure against lawsuits put out by other states where they were saying you can't call it therapy.
But it has no force of law, so it was just irrelevant. Yeah.
Right. There was nothing that this was binding anyone to except for chaining those words to the legs of people that are pushing the Republican platform in Texas or pushing Republican values in Texas. And I was attempting to explain that there was better ways to deal with messaging and that the party shouldn't and the party people that did this was a broad group of people, but the push for this to be included was a very small number of people that got it in. And because of time and because there were other issues people were more passionate about, it didn't get removed where it might have on the floor. Might, I say, because that's not necessarily an issue that, you know, if you talk about protecting reparative therapy in Texas, that would be viewed as, you know, defense against liberal lawfare tactics and whatever. I understand how it came up. I don't think it had a place there. And I spent an inordinate amount of time commenting about how we needed to do these things better. Mm-hmm. And that people, what it did was give ammunition to groups on the left to point to Texas and say, Texas is so backwards, they think all gays need to go and be fixed with this therapy. That's not anything like what the platform says, but because it's in there and because they're the ones with the megaphone messaging about it, that's the impression that's going to be out there, regardless of what the actual words say.
Right.
It's going to take people too long to look it up and find to see what it really says.
It's way too easy just to click and share the meme.
You know,
and I could not get that through to these guys that this messaging was a trap. This being in the platform, it was a trap.
We need training on our side just on how to recover when members of our side do things so utterly disastrous.
Right. And, you know, it was so predictable that phrase in the platform, Fishy wrote her post at FRN about it, and the next day Perry was in California and he was asked about it, and then 2 days later here comes this meme from HRC. It was all exactly as predicted. And for people that are watching and want better for the Conservative Party, my brother-in-law last night, when I mentioned, I brought up, yeah, Fishy was at the GOP convention, so she was there for all of the platform talk, and Bobby brought it up. He said, oh my God, can we please stop giving ammunition to our enemies? He's wise enough to understand that the absolute only good that platform does is hand ammunition to your enemies. So there are people out there who get it. And what's really disappointing is the argument that Fishy had on that post with a guy who wants to drive the conservative movement, he wants all the right things, but he is adamant that we should be able to say what we want, whatever way we want to say it, and they're bad for misinterpreting us, they're evil, we're right, and you don't want to water down the message, or whatever it was.
I told him, I can't believe you're serious. We have commercials, focus group tested commercials and ads for everything in this country. Yet somehow it's bad, deceptive, and wrong to find a way to say things that doesn't automatically shut us off from our target market. And I said, I don't know what to say to you. And he says to me, and this is what shut me down, principles matter more to me than selling out to get votes.
What do you do with that? How do we help that?
Okay,
I don't
want
to give up on that guy.
One second. I'm not entirely certain whether this is a person that you should give up on or not, but this is our equivalent to social justice warriors. There's a direct parallel to the same guys that are on Tumblr in their basement, yelling about their pet cause of ableism or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's the same exact guy, same exact rage, same exact desire to just have everything be their way, the way they want, and they have no problem with there ought to be a law to shut down arguments. So his entire premise, his entire argument that he gives in this dreck that I just read, that I'm miserable that I was not a part of because I don't read Google Plus near as often as I should.
I was this close to tagging you until he said that.
And at some point you just have to walk away and let it drop because, so do you figure that, words, find them, Leslie. they're out there. The truth is out there. So, JD, you're saying that there are people like this on the left and you use them for donating to causes and then you don't worry about bringing them into the larger movement. You just let them be out there like your crazy uncle?
There's not much that you can do about it. There are people that you just can't reach. There absolutely are people that you just can't reach. This is definitely more of a Andy situation to triage with this, because this is a tough nut to crack just by reading the comments there. I don't know that you have any hope of really doing anything to convert him to your side. It's just best to do what Fishy did and give a really solid counter argument and say, hey, dude, you're wrong. Present your message as best that you can and go away. Walk away from the discussion, because he has much more time than you do, and he is absolutely interested in making you waste as much of your time on him as possible.
Well, and I think, too, that we need to stress we can't make those judgments early on in conversations. You can't just say, oh, well, after three comments that don't agree or that are kind of shutting you down, you can walk away and say, that's not worth it. There are people, and this was, on my wall in a community that most of them, tend to agree in on principles and on values. And the other thing is, I think probably we need to stress that the links that we talked about tonight, we're posting in our internal chat, but they will be added at the bottom of the YouTube for people to click as they watch, so that if there's anything we mention, you can check the list there and see what we're talking about, including this conversation, which we're people might be able to see it in action a little better than us just talking about it.
Yeah.
You're talking about the people, JD, who say, my principles mean more than winning. Is that it?
That's putting it mildly, but yes.
Okay. Well, yeah, you're right. A lot of them you just can't reach. What I always tell them is basically, look, how great, if do you think you're, do you love your principles? Do you think they're awesome? Or do you think that they should just be up on a wall, not being used by anybody, just framed somewhere uselessly? Or do you think they should be used by people? Do you think they should be applied by people? Well, if you want them available to be applied by more people, you have to win politically. That's the reality. So I actually agree with you. I like principles better than winning, too. I do, too. But I love those principles so much, I can't accept them just being words on a plaque on a wall. I love them so much, I want to see them at work in people's lives. I want to see capitalism at work in people's lives. I love morality. I want to see it at work in people's lives. I want to see people, you know, find these great things. They can't do that if these are just words on a wall, on a plaque on a wall, and you lose every election. If they are never applied, if they are never put in or allowed publicly, which is what will happen if the Democrats continue to win, you've reduced all your wonderful principles to a plaque.
And this is where the power of persuasion is so much more important for us to develop as a skill, because we are the party of choice. If our principles are to be deployed and used for the benefit of all, they have to choose it for themselves. Whereas the Democrats, their principles, they can force them on everybody because they're the party of control. So you don't have to adopt the Democrats' principles. They'll take care of that for you. They just have to give you candy and make you vote for them. We have to figure out how to sell our principles because we have to make our principles be the object that voters choose.
That's a great point.
Yeah,
that's a great point because we don't give people candy. That's not what we're in it for, and that's not what we do.
And so we have to somehow figure out a way to be more persuasive than they are. They're kicking our butts because it's easy to give people candy. People, do you want some cake or death? I mean, yes, you want cake. And it's not like we're giving them a choice of death. We're not the death choice. But, you know, if you're given a choice between cake and not cake, they're going to choose cake.
Fishy brought something up in the chat here that I think is important.
Other than eating a Nature Valley peanut bar?
Other than eating a Nature Valley peanut bar. there's no peanut bar eating shaming going on here, so please let's not. She brought up the concept of faders. We talked about this as she was going to the Republican convention in Texas. We talked about or as she was going back the concept of we have these guys in the base that are talking full blast about their principles and that it's constant, it's a droning sound that you can't get past. What we need to do is we need to take the volume control and tone it back a little bit. To take the fader, ease it back out. We still need to talk about these things, but it just needs to be a little bit more subtle, a little bit lower volume. You can do that with a lot of people. A lot of people can understand that. A lot of people will get that point and adjust their messaging, for a small amount of time. Eventually they'll revert back. That's something that happens a lot. You kind of have to reinforce this point. But I think that the discussion that we're having here, this guy is so far past the point of rationality and reason, and oh god, I just used those two words, so I'm definitely a rhino. I'm sorry everybody, I'm a rhino.
Well, you didn't say pragmatist, so you're okay.
Yes. It's really, it's tough to reclaim the messaging fail. It's tough to get that to put that back into that toothpaste back into the tube. When this guy goes,
My goal is to keep him from influencing too many others.
Right.
And that's why Fishy was doing was the correct strategy.
Yeah.
Because you have to give the opposite opinion. You do have to have these conversations, and you do have to give your side out, a shot at actually winning the messaging battle. And I think that most rational people, when they're reading these discussions, are going to agree with the person who wasn't cursing, who didn't call some serious names in this thing, and actually made a cogent point, as opposed to my principles. You can't do anything about it because you're a corrupting influence on everything. My pristine snow, as the driven snow, principles are going to protect me from everything.
Here's the way I think about it. When I'm thinking about faders, I'm thinking about a mixing board in a recording studio, and what works for one piece of music, one genre with the dial settings, doesn't work for the next one or the next one or the next one. And we need to know how to fine-tune which things to put to the forefront, which thing, they're all, the elements are still there. Nothing is watered down. It might be muted a little bit or, you know, changed a little bit, distorted here and there from the way it sounded originally, but not eliminated. And that's a key distinction. And more pressure on one side of the fader will bring more of one kind of message up and, you know, toning some others down. I just thought it was a great way to talk about the continuum of all the people
for what?
To talk to.
Turn down for what? That's what I have to say.
Well, and that's true. It is actually a pretty useful way to talk about it. And I think a lot of the pushback we're getting is it's fear-based pushback that because they've seen and they are still being persuaded by our political betters, our elected officials, that we need to, they'll say moderate the message, but what they mean is vote along with the Democrats and give up on Republican principles.
Right.
But what they're saying is moderate your message. So when we come along and say moderate your message, we're having to undo the damage that other Republicans, frankly, moderate your message means be a moderate rather than being a conservative.
Yeah, I don't want anybody to moderate their message. What I want them to do is I want them to consider their audience. Where is my audience now? Look, let's, for instance, you know, and I'll tell some people this, you know, like in Tea Party groups, if you're talking to a group of people who don't speak English yet, you have to first teach them to speak English before you can explain to them the Founding Fathers. Okay, you know what I mean? Unless you can do that in their other language. But what I, you know, if you can't, if somebody cannot understand where you are, you have to consider your audience. Do you want the, look, do you, once again, do you want these principles to be your angry plaque on your wall, or do you want it to change lives? Well, if you want to change lives, that means other people's lives than your own, and that means that you got to figure out where they are and come to them in a way that they can hear what you're saying. Okay, you have to for the receiver, not just the speaker. You know.
One of the things we learned in some of the marketing, in some of the sales training classes when I was a salesperson, was WIFM, W-I-F-M. And that's when you're a salesperson, you always need to understand that your potential customer is always thinking WIFM. What's in it for me? And as long as you have an answer to that question, as long as you know enough about them that your product is something, has something in it for them that makes their lives better, then you can sell it. If you don't know what it is they want and what it is they need, you haven't done your job.
But if you're talking to somebody who was raised like I was in leftist academia, you have to take that into account.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, that's classic, JD. You have to take that into account. You have to take into account they were raised in leftist academia. They've been given every reason to hate you. Okay? Don't act like that's not there. That's ridiculous. Right?
Well, yes. And let's talk honestly here. One of the problems that I think we have with breaking this down, communication down to this level so often, is that we don't want to be missionaries. We just want to say what we want to say because it feels good to say it. And we know that now, given the culture, there's people that feel like us too out there. So we're happy talking to the bubble. But we also forget that this has been an onslaught from over 100 years of slow and measured progress from progressives that have got us here. And we have unreasonable expectations on our side that we can turn things around very quickly. And I would argue that the election of a few liberty-oriented, solid candidates now is the beginning and not the sole goal that we're after. We're after a huge number of people who think like us, but that only happens a bit at a time with severe focus, with great concentration, and with the learning curve that we've got to get where Tea Party people haven't been involved in elections. They don't know how these games are played. The people that do know how the games are played are kind of looked at as a little dirty because they understand the politics of things. We've got to take our measured gains where we can get them and not immediately reject people simply because they don't measure up to the very, very tall yardstick that we've set.
And we have to not be black and white. Somebody who's been in elected office for 45 years is an insider, but isn't necessarily a bad insider. Maybe they are somebody who really knows how the game is played, and they've been trying to be effective, and they can be a learning tool for us to figure out how the game is played. And, you know, now that we're there to be a force multiplier for them, maybe they can now be instrumental in the thing they've been trying to do for 45 years. Who knows? We have to not necessarily judge people by the number of years they've been in office or who they are friends with, or, you know, we have to be a little bit more understanding of some gray. And somebody who is a Tea Party candidate or claims to be a Tea Party candidate or knows how to spell Tea Party isn't necessarily actually somebody we want in office, and they may not be the person who can win the office.
Well, we, you know, two things to keep in mind, you know, like we were saying last week, you know, like I was asking, has any Tea Party candidate won a purple state or district?
Okay. And I don't think so.
I don't care if you can win the red ones. Okay. That doesn't impress me. And I'm a Tea Partier. I love the Tea Party. I want to run them where they can win to start. Okay? Mm-hmm. But, you know, we equate, too many people equate skill with compromise. Look at Sarah Palin now on Fox News versus Sarah Palin 2 years ago. She's much more skilled. No, she comes on, mm-hmm. on Hannity and these things. And let me tell you, it's night and day. She is far more skilled, far more reserved, far more cutting in the things she says. What, do you think she tossed her principles? She didn't toss any principles. She learned.
She learned how to be more effective.
Yes. Yes. When did that become a bad thing?
Exactly.
You know, what do you want to do? Are you upset at her? Do you think she's a sellout? Or do you think she's acquiring skill in an area that she hadn't done before?
Waterboarding is how we baptize terrorists.
She's still a publicity hound. She's always going to be a publicity hound, and she's always going to be tossing out a phrase that to try to make it a trademark phrase. That one laid a big egg.
I think when we talk about what people like Sarah Palin or other people, we definitely want to see progress in messaging across long term, and that is what you're looking for. She's more refined in the way she speaks in some ways, but she has also adopted the red meat strategy, which is, again, bubble politics. She's not your outreach person. That's not where you place her in the political force.
No, but the problem is not that. The problem is that she's not training anyone else to be a missionary. And hey, newsflash: to win elections, somebody's got to be a missionary.
Right. She's trying to make a mark as a kingmaker and to be influential in rallying the troops and getting people to cheer and getting people to show up at the polls because they're excited about Shannon in Oklahoma, or they're excited about McDaniel. So she's trying to do that, to lend her popularity, because she can drive people to the ballot. That's and I think there are a lot of people, once they find out that Sarah Palin is behind Chris McDaniel, okay, then between Thad, who I've known forever, and Chris McDaniel, Sarah Palin, and all of those guys, and that crowd is behind him, so okay, I will go vote. Or Sarah Palin and that crowd is behind T.W. Shannon, I will go vote.
Hey, that's
perfect. That's her role.
And those are all red states, too. Yeah.
Because in a red state, we should get Tea Party guys and make Thad Cochran go home. In a red state.
Right. That's an upgrade for us.
That's an upgrade. And I want to upgrade where we can. Absolutely.
And it's an upgrade that we can get.
Mm-hmm.
And in Jersey next.
Now, if we were able to get a purple Republican, somebody who was actually a Democrat who accidentally called himself a Republican and was willing to caucus with the Republicans every now and then and get that guy elected in New Jersey, that would be awesome.
We did, governor.
Well, you say that. You say that. Maybe it's best. Maybe it's best not to get into that subject. I'm still thinking about some certain choice words that I have for that situation. Yeah. But
focused on Jeff. You've got Jeff tomorrow.
Yes, Jeff tomorrow. So I think I'll keep my mouth shut when it comes to the Republican Party in New Jersey.
Bottom line is this. And I'm not joking here, I mean this, I like Chris Christie.
Me too. To be honest, I think he's a great guy. I think he's fun.
I think he's a great guy.
So does Chris Christie.
He is, yeah, but that's this is Jersey. They don't want wallflowers, okay?
That's true.
Now, and here's the thing. Chris Christie is a perfect adaptation to where the needle is on public opinion on the issues in that state.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I want to know, when you interview this guy, how is he going to take that into account? Not is he going to become Chris Christie. But look, he can't just say, well, I'm just going to do it my way. No. You understand. Your way, look, his way wins 60% of the vote in a Democrat state and balances budgets in a state where budgets are never balanced. Well, compared to where they were, okay, comparatively speaking.
Comparatively speaking, yes.
Yeah. I mean, the difference he has made versus having a hardline, a straight Democrat governor is night and day.
Okay. Insofar as we actually have budgets that pass now, that is a preferable situation to not having budgets. So, yes.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Look. And then, again, in Mississippi, what's happening there is good. Okay? And I think Cantor losing was good. I really do. I think it puts that district into some danger for us, but I think we'll win it. Okay? We're not going to win it by 17 like he did. I think it'll be single digits, but we'll win it. Okay?
Look, hey, single vote is sufficient.
Yeah. You know, and you know, actually, in a lot of states.
As long as it exceeds the margin of cheating, then we're fine.
It's not enough. One vote is not enough because then you'll be in legal battles for the next 12 years, and it's just a messy thing. So, it's 1,200 votes is good.
Look, all I'm saying is I love Chris Christie. I think he's perfect there.
He would not ever win an election in Texas.
No, but he's not supposed to.
Right.
And by the way, do not for a second think Chris Christie would run as the same kind of guy in Texas as he does where he is.
No.
He would do what he needed to win Texas if he wanted to be, yeah.
Heck yeah, he would.
Here's where I think we get so confused in our messaging. A few years ago, there was a poll that talked about how conservatives outnumbered liberals in polls 2-1. 40% conservative nation, 20% liberal, and then you had the other 40% just out in the middle. And people began to believe, I think, or to understand the world as there's a whole bunch of us, and we just need to connect with each other, and we can do whatever we need to do. What they did not take into account, I think, is that those 20% of liberals are 24/7 liberal activists, 24/7 progressive activists for the most part. Right. And that the 40% of people on the conservative side are kind of, I'll get to an issue when I get to it. There may be one thing that animates me. They are not professionally conservative in their life the way that I think all of us in this particular hangout are. And what you get is that 20% of people who are so thoroughly committed and doing the work that it needs, whether it's knocking on doors, making phone calls, whatever it is that needs to be done, walking blocks, anything, versus the 40% who aren't really committed to doing very much, your 20% is going to outwork your 40% no matter what, if they are that committed. And we've not been even getting our 40% to manage dealing the messaging to our 40% And then we've still got to go out and win over that other 40%, because that is where their 20% is directed. That's where they're aimed.
Right.
It's a huge difference if they're going to outwork us.
If our 40% was half as active as their 20, we'd be even. But our 40% is not half as active.
Our 40% is intimidated by their 20%. That's what blows my mind.
And we're talking to each other about it. And you see a lot of people posting on the internet about this failure of the administration or that stupid thing a Democrat did, but they're not putting it in a way that's going to touch the other 40% that we need.
You know what blows my mind? It's just like whenever you see a family that has two dogs and one of them is a big dog and the other one's this little yappy dog, which one's in charge?
The little yappy dog.
Always. The big one's intimidated by the little yappy one.
And so we are Rottweilers, and Democrats are freaking Chihuahuas.
That is not something that I have any experience with. I don't know what you're talking about. And I am not being pressured right now to say these things. I am not checking my Facebook right now. Okay, that was enough. That was apparently enough. Continue. Proceed.
Fishy is the little dog. JD is the big dog.
Did not come out of my mouth. I never said it.
What to do?
I will deny it. Deny it. Deny it.
Mm-hmm. JD, blink SOS if you need help.
Kill her. Please kill her.
Ay, ay, ay. But no, it's absolutely true, and the fact that we have this ridiculous fear of, I can't even figure it out. Is it because it's the media that is in, oh God, we can't deal with the media, so we have to reject the media instead of going on the media and giving our answers, trying to respond to it directly there. Now, there's so much of this desire to, react in an offensive way to try and push back, when pushing back doesn't really get you any ground. It doesn't gain you any ground. You think that you're pushing back. You think that you're doing something, but all the rest of the people out there see is these guys are out protesting media again. I mean, who cares?
Right.
As long as the NFL is still being broadcast, as long as I can still watch my World Cup soccer, and The Bachelorette or whatever, Dancing with the Stars is still on. It's not. There's no Democrats, no Republicans in Dancing with the Stars. So
this is one thing that actually cuts both ways. Don't be the side that looks more pathetic. And Scott Walker, people wonder, well, how Scott Walker won in a Democrat state and all this. I'll tell you the biggest reason. Union protests. Teachers' union protests. They were put on TV. The liberal media in Wisconsin put them on TV because they wanted to be proud of these. And the teachers were screaming, yelling like thugs, holding up signs, being vicious, and looking like animals. And people were just like, that's pathetic. That's what is educating our kids. And people felt revulsion. What it did is it backfired. And I think it's the same on our side. We get on camera and whatever, and we look pathetic in that way. Whiny, yelly, my way or the highway and all this. Pathetic doesn't sell.
Well, and here let's look at it this way as well. When you've got that 20%, working so hard on the left, one of the things they're very, very concerned with doing is otherizing conservative values and conservative heroes. And so they're trying to make everyone in that conservative 40% feel alone and isolated and look as though they are marginalized. They're on the fringe when their values, obviously you can still see Hollywood isn't making movies about people who, you know, are great heroes because they pull off the best lies or whatever like that. It's not like that. If they're lying, it's in service to something else. If they're swindling, it's in service to something else, usually. Hollywood's still making conservative-themed movies, but it's those people that are conservative, that are otherized. And that's the whole point, is to make those people on the conservative side be completely outliers. And in that way, they get to identify with that middle ground 40%, and it's them all together against those freaky conservatives over there. And if we're not going and talking to that 40% and showing them that we're not the freaky people we're being cast, that we're not, that our values aren't really outlandish or crazy or wacky, that we don't really think that all gays need to go to reparative therapy, unless we're out there talking to those people, they're never going to see the other side. They're just going to de facto go with what the media and what academia and the left has been pushing.
And what sometimes we push on ourselves, which is another, you know, issue. Another thing I want to just go into real quick, and this goes back to the whole, you know, not everyone is Kurt Schlichter situation, and that's the fact that not everyone is Andrew Breitbart. As much as we wear the T-shirts, and I'm wearing one right now, and, you know, we like to have this whole thing, people think that the correct response after Andrew died was, you know, oh God, we have to rally against the media, we have to push back, we have to fight back. The thing that Andrew Breitbart was so incredibly brilliant at wasn't making the media, and wasn't making them irrelevant because, oh, you know, they're the media, they suck. He didn't just do that. He was able to use the media against itself. He was able to, you know, confound them and make them, you know, a moot point. He was able to plan around them, use them against themselves. And that's not something that your average person is going to be able to do, and that's not something that a boycott does. It's not something that calling Rachel Maddow terrible names is going to do anything about. It's not, you know, that's not what you're doing. That's not what you're accomplishing. If that's in your head that that's what you're doing and that's what you're accomplishing, you're wrong. And not only are you wrong, you're probably hurting your cause. It's just that's something that we have far too much of going on here.
Well, and when you talk about his manipulation of the media, the very best example that you can talk about is hijacking the press conference with Anthony Weiner. It was brilliant. They were all waiting, and Anthony Weiner was taking his time, and Andrew Breitbart just strode up as though he belonged there. And what also, this is the kind of guy, when he'd go and talk to people of, you know, liberal protests and whatever, he'd take them all out to eat afterwards, you know, sit around late night Denny's or whatever and go have a bite. This was a guy who was not afraid to go out and talk to people. He wasn't just standing and pointing at the enemy and identifying them. He was engaging them skillfully because of the skill set and the training that he had already had.
Well, and a key thing, and they talked about this at Texas Online, was figure out who you are and be that. If you're not Andrew Breitbart, don't try to be Andrew Breitbart. It worked for him because that's who he was. That was natural to him. And he had that mix of anger and humor that allowed his anger to not really ever be all that ugly, though there were times that it was too much for me. And, you know, I don't want to, you know, say bad things of the dead, but he was also not a god. You know, he was a normal guy, and he did a lot of great things. He wasn't perfect, and the loss of Andrew Breitbart is, you know, it hurt the movement, but it didn't kill us. We're all still out here, and we each need to learn from him and be 1% of that Andrew Breitbart. Take the 1% of Andrew Breitbart that we are, and if there are 100 of us doing it, then it's as if he never died, because there's 100 of 1%, and we're all the 1%ers. That's the 1%er that I want to be. But, you know, but the key is, yeah, we can learn about what what makes Dana Loesch so successful or what makes Sarah Palin so successful, and take the bits and pieces of each one of those successful people that we admire and figure out how that fits into our own personality, our own skills, our own aptitude, and our own interest. Because, it, you know, Fishy is the social butterfly, remembers everybody, gets out there and does stuff, and everybody knows her. And I'm jealous as hell, but I'm not going to copy that because I would never be that person, because that's just, that's not who I am. Not exactly sure what my skill set is, but I can run a hangout fairly well. Although, don't rewind and listen to the beginning of this. You won't believe me, but... But, you know, we each have our things that we can do and do more of and do better. The hardest thing for me is trying to engage people on my side to get beyond using social media as entertainment, which most people do. I mean, most people just use social media as something fun, and they're into politics, so they talk about politics for fun because they don't want to talk about flowers or their artificial nails. It's just that, you know, politics is their topic, and to try to take those people and convert them into activists, or try to, you know, maybe manipulate them into doing something good for the movement while they're also having a good time. I don't know how to do that all that well. I think that's the key for us, though, is because there are 40% of the population out there is conservative, and they're on social media, and they're willing to talk about their values, although maybe they're not all that interested in politics. Or maybe they are interested in politics and they want to just talk about the news and did you hear this story? How do we turn that into intentional activism?
Well, to a degree, you can't.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's
okay, we're done.
That's
bye. The end.
As sad as it is, it's pretty much the truth. It's pretty hard to, you know, if you could figure out the answer to that question, then we wouldn't have a problem. We wouldn't be in the situation that we're in.
I mean, you know, one big thing I always say to the choir on our side, because let's face it, most of the choir is not intense like this group that is talking right now.
I mean, look at how much time we're dedicating to this.
Yeah.
And most people don't do that.
Right. And I look at them and I say this, you know why the left, you know why that 20%, you know why the left is so intense and dedicated? Because they have the time to. You're busy living your life. And here's how much activism I think you should have. Enough to keep you free to live your life. Okay? All I think you should do,
God.
Enough to free you from you. That's it. But I understand you're actually living your life. Okay? They're not. And I don't want you to become them, but please do enough to keep them from taking away your right to live your life. Right?
And what does that translate to, though?
Yeah, that's tough.
And by the way, you're right. I do hate people, all of them.
it translates into getting a six-pack, painting up a big banner, and then hanging it over an overpass and saying, oh, hey, honk if you think that Obama is a jerk.
Cool.
That's the activism right there. The lowest there. I mean, the lowest common denominator of activism is out there, and it's unhelpful.
That's page one activism?
No,
yes.
I mean, really, thinking about what you've said, though, Andy, when we're talking to people who are internet warriors or who fancy themselves internet warriors, that's fine, and there's a place for that. I would hope people would take the next step. But if a person is merely an internet warrior, I have gotten into the habit where I'm definitely not going to take advice from them on what actions to take. Someone who's argued with legislators over legislation, is someone who's advocated for or against measures on ballots and candidates and whatever. Those are things I feel comfortable doing and have had experience with, and I get more experience as I do more of it. But I don't expect people in the movement to become those type of warriors and activists. Everybody has, though, a circle of influence. Everybody has somebody that is unengaged or disengaged that they can reach and talk to about these things. And that may be the sum total of somebody's activism, but it's a few more people that they're reaching that I can never get to.
Right.
Regardless of where I am. I may be somebody who's, you know, got a higher profile, but I'll never get into the corners of those places with people that are unengaged unless they're tuned into, like, my channels of communication.
And that's where a lot of it is, helping people to stand up and proclaim themselves as out and proud conservatives. Because there are still an awful lot of people who are intimidated by the media and the leftists, and they don't talk about politics at work. Nobody at work knows that I'm a conservative. Nobody at my son's school knows I'm conservative. They're all liberal there. I could never speak about any of this. And my profile name on Google Plus is a fake name because I don't want anybody to know what I say here. And that is crippling us. That is keeping us from reaching.
And that's why everybody needs to go to the Party of Choices YouTube channel and start watching and taking lessons, because Andy and Corey and all the teams they've put together have started talking about how to talk about these things. And everybody should check out their website at thepartyofchoice.com, if I got that right.
Yep.
There you go. It's okay. thepartyofchoice.com. Yep.
With the in front of it. Everyone should be checking that out and reading through some of those posts as well, simply because these are the guys that you want equipping you when you do talk in that large crowd of people that you don't think believe like you. Let Andy and Corey help find that point of connection with folks like that. There's a school budget issue in my hometown, which is a traditionally liberal union town, where there was some scandal, there was some major embezzlement of millions of dollars, and now they're laying off a bunch of people, including my sister. And it's, you know, programs that they're having to let go because all of this money went disappearing. It has united so many people in that community around opposition to the school board and the way it works, that there might be conversations happening over that issue between people who would never. Finding little places like that where you can connect with somebody is a great first step, where you're not feeling like you've got to put the whole banner and flag and the eagles and all that in front. You're just talking about things people care about.
But they see, that's great, though, because what you can say is this. There's a principle there, right? Because that board was in control of everything, they could abuse that control. And so now you get this disparate group of people. They come together and they can unite against that. And you look at them and you just say, that's great. See, we got a lot more in common than we thought. But the problems we have with the school board, how can we apply that same? How can we apply that same thing to other issues? We don't get controlled here. Let's make sure we don't get controlled here. Let's make sure we don't get, you know what I mean? It can work. Once you find one area where you can work together, where you're on the same side of the fence, you can run together.
Absolutely.
That's really true.
It's just a matter of pushing it forward and realizing that you have that opportunity and can make it go that extra mile for you. And that's something that it's hard to do. It's hard for people to realize that. It's hard for people to take those gains and turn them into further gains.
But it's also difficult. Very hard to demonize people with whom you've been in the trenches compared to people that you don't know that are anonymous on the internet or that are those people over there that I never talked to. And building a bridge based on one fight is certainly the best way to open up the door to work together on more.
Yeah, because you know what? You find out it's fun to work together. It's fun to not hate each other for a bit. You know, one thing that I really get sick and tired of with the left especially, but sometimes with the right, is all the hate.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it nice to actually agree on something? Hey, this school board was corrupt. Look what they did with their power. Okay, what can we do about this? No. That doesn't mean we're suddenly all going to want school choice, yada yada. But look, isn't it fun not to be at each other's throats? Let's try not being at each other's throats and see what we can create in another area.
Being win-lose, it ends up being win-win, and that's more in tune with what conservatives and Republicans and libertarians are about anyway. Because we grow the whole pie with the win-win, and that is more, you know, maybe some of our problem with engaging in politics is so many people on our side, we only see people engaged in politics that are on the left, and the left is very win-lose. And we're not so much win-lose kind of people. We're win-win people. And so we see all of these political activists that are win-lose people. And we're like, I'm not like that. So I can't be a political activist because I'm not a win-lose kind of person.
No, and exactly. And what I would do is, let's say I'm in the area where the school board thing is happening, okay? And I got a bunch of conservatives that I know in that area. I would go to them and say, okay, look, just so you know, we're all about to bond. We're all starting to bond with a bunch of people across the political spectrum on this issue. I want you to know what I want you guys to understand what an opportunity this is. These people are told and taught from their leadership that you are evil. And you, by not preaching at them, but by bonding with them, you are about to disprove everything they've been taught about you.
Right. How can you be a conservative? You're so nice.
What exactly? What?
That is absolutely true. That is I've heard that. I have heard that exact same thing uttered from liberals, and it's ridiculous how we are portrayed, and when that gets uttered.
The conventional wisdom is out there, and people who are afraid to let their conservatism be known, they will also be 100% aware of the liberalism of everybody they hang out with. It's like, but do you understand? You're afraid to say who you are. They are absolutely not afraid to say who they are because you know all of them are liberal. They do not hesitate to talk about their liberalism. There have been plenty of conversations about people who, conservative people who want to go to a needlework store and do a crochet evening, and they were very uncomfortable because all of the other 8 people there were talking about all of their liberal stuff, and they made the conservative never spoke up in any way, shape, or form, just was there quiet crocheting and then left in tears because they were talking all sorts of bad things about, you know, all conservatives are nasty, hateful people. And I'm like, well, you could have actually spoken up and say, I'm a conservative, and you guys have been saying mean and nasty, horrible things all day long, and I've been nothing but nice.
You know what I do in those situations? Seriously, because I've been in them. I don't even say that much. I say, you think that, huh? And I just leave it for them to press more questions. What do you mean? What do you mean? What do you mean? You know, and then you've got their ear. And I just think that we don't see it as an opportunity enough. Because, look, I don't blame these people for being intimidated by the crochet group that's 8-1 liberal to conservative. They should be. Those are terrible. It's like sitting in on The View. It's awful. And you know, it's fine. Hey, I get that. But see it as an opportunity, because you do realize you're about to break. How many opportunities do you get to totally destroy a stigma?
Right.
Never. I mean, never. You go through your day-to-day life, you don't have any talk of politics. You don't have any talk of these things. Yeah, at least I'm not sitting next to Joy. You know, you don't talk. You don't have these things. You don't have that opportunity at work very much. You don't have that opportunity at a lot of places. You have that opportunity to break a stigma. And let me tell you something. There will be people in there who, as they get to know that you are not what they were told you are, they're going to be embittered against those who told them you are this way. You will create bitterness very quickly among the ranks of the Democrats, and I know this because I've done it myself.
Yes, it's really interesting what happens when you are a nice guy to people, when you're a nice person. And then suddenly,
I'm gonna have to try that.
Then yeah, really. Right? and then suddenly, you start hearing from people that smack gets talked behind your back because of your beliefs, and it happens, and people aren't happy about that. If you have proven yourself to be somebody that is a friend and somebody who is not a jerk, it's remarkable what happens. I don't want to drag high school type situations into this. It's not, it's not like that, but
yeah, it is.
not all of the time, but you have
middle school,
but you definitely have that kind of a situation where people get really upset when somebody that they are, they consider a friend is being demeaned for, what is really an insignificant reason. It's like saying that somebody is an awful person because they're a Green Bay Packers fan.
Exactly. And we're all wonderful.
Well, some of you are better than others. But
you know, and by the way, I'm sorry to toot our horn on the messaging thing, but it is good to have a simple phrase like, here's my politics, I want to control my own life, not yours. That's what it all boils down to. I want to control my own life, not yours. And then you don't talk politics, you talk crochet. You talk, you talk knitting or whatever, whatever this group does. But, when it comes up and you just say, yeah, I'm a conservative. Look, my bottom line is I want to control my own life, not yours. So we probably have some areas where we agree, by the way. And then just let it go. Let them, in other words, dangle the bait. Let them run with it. Okay.
So what you're saying is you don't want to get into ridiculous specifics. You don't want to have a 30-page version of everything that you believe in to start off a conversation. What you want is you want something that's simple and to the point. And
that 30-page platform is my bulletproof shield.
What I'm saying
way
is...
Way to cycle it back, JD.
What I'm saying is if I want to control every area of your life, then I will need 2,700 pages to do it. If I want to unleash your life, I need a simple sentence that says I want to control my own life, not yours. And the thing about that line is it makes you the good guy. There's no way to be the bad guy if you... Now, they can disagree and say, well, but I think you do... Hey, guess what they just did?
What about the poor people?
Yeah, well, what about the poor people? What about abortion? What about this? What did they just do? They opened up the conversation. They just put the conversation on your terms. It's beautiful. They might as well wave the white flag. They just gave up. You see, what they... The left is at its most comfortable when it keeps you at a distance and silenced. The last thing you want is to engage... Jeez.
The other thing that's really beautiful about this example is that the person involved, our conservative person who's going into this knitting circle and is getting, I say guy. That's how gender neutral I am.
Everybody's a guy into the thing.
Gender norms mean absolutely nothing to me. That's the thing. That's my generation. Yes.
I could really run with that, but I'm going to let it go.
Microaggression.
Thank you, Andy. Yes, there are going to be many, many microaggressions. No.
Macroaggression.
The idea, the thought is going into any event, and you see that people are bad mouthing conservatism, and you don't say anything. You don't get involved, and you don't, is that really what you think? If you don't start the conversation,
I work at a liberal company. I can't talk about politics at work. I work around a bunch of artists.
The idea is that everybody else is going to be that super liberal. When in reality, chances are, it's only going to be one or two of them. And the odds, we're going back to the odds situation. Oh, it's 8-1. It's not, it's never 8-1. It is never 8-1. It's probably going to be 2-1 in one of those scenarios. And the other guys are just following what the leaders say. You are emboldened by the presence of somebody who is speaking up. So chances are you might actually pull up some support from somebody else. You know, it's really, if there's no one there to offer the counter argument, then you are going to constantly be in that outnumbered position. That's the trouble. So, this is a really important thing, something that really we really need to get into, and something that we need to have more people realize that, hey, it's not the end of the world to get into these discussions, and there is a way to do it. So thank you, Andy, for trying to bring it. Yes.
I love that.
Exactly. Cool. Well, no, for bringing this kind of, the skills, the approach to people, the way to get into these situations and not feel like they're going to be under constant attack, or giving people the confidence that they have a plan, that they have a battle strategy here that is going to succeed, or at the very least is not going to end up in a loss. That's a big deal.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
And what's interesting is a lot of people will avoid talking politics because they don't know that much about it, or they don't know all the policy ins and outs, and they don't feel informed enough to have a political discussion with anyone, so they'll just avoid it with the assumption that the liberals that they are amongst are brilliant, which we know that's not true, but that's what people, it's what you think when you're insecure. I know that. But with something like, I want to control my own life, not yours, that's enough of a foundational stepping stone that I can actually use that philosophy on any topic that somebody brings up.
Yeah.
Because if you want to talk about regulations, I want to control my own life. So that means you need to stop with the regulations because you're controlling my life. I don't want to control your life. There's, any issue, I don't have to know a whole lot of specifics about it. You can bring up anything that's never even occurred to me before. And if I have that foundation of, I want to control my own life, not yours, and that's my philosophy, I can speak to it and I can tell you what my position is.
You know, the great thing about it too is if you're forced to go back to that dynamic time and again to talk about your issues and you keep using that as the launch pad for your discussions, you'll find that it's almost going to help you with the messaging end of how you're talking about things, because you're focusing on the real core root of the problems, not issue by issue by issue by issue.
Not the height of the border fence or the...
No, well, all I do is I say this, look, obviously I want to control my own life, not yours. Do you agree? Okay, let's apply that, here's the word, together, looking at this...
Yeah.
Whatever the issue is, hey, it would surprise you. I'll do that with gay friends. Gay marriage. Yeah, you want that? Fine. Okay, but do you want your freedom to take away the freedoms of the church? Do you want to force people who believe in other lifestyles to offer services for you? Do you, in other words, do you want to legislate your bitterness against them? Do you want to piss off do you want to pass laws, actual laws, to do all you can to piss off the Christian right? Or do you want to control your own life, not others? Do you want to become the better you? Do you want me to be the better me? Well, why don't we do it together? And the neat thing is you can apply it to anything, and that's when, when they say, well, what's the ruler of the yardstick? I just say, I support every individual choice that doesn't take away someone else's. Now, we're going to disagree on where that ends at times. That's okay, but can we agree on the starting point? And if you do that, and you're at that knitting group, you very quickly disarm a lot of that hatred. It's hard to hate somebody who's saying this. I want to control my own life, not yours. How about we apply that together to whatever issue? Hey, I'll probably agree with you on some stuff.
And see, this is why anybody who's going to Colorado, has any plans for Colorado in near future, needs to stay in touch with Andy and Corey on Facebook so they know if there's anything they can slip in any of these meetings where Andy goes into this in detail, because I am desperate to get up there and have one of these trainings and actually sit in the room and watch this happen.
When you do these trainings, how long are they? I mean, how many hours? Is it a full day, half day?
It's 3 months, and it's intensive. No, I mean,
and it costs $20,000, and you can get a student loan, and okay.
Well, it costs.
That's an idea. Let's do it.
It costs less if you sign up three people, and.
So it's like Dropbox, and you get an extra 250 gig of storage.
Exactly, you know, and now what we do is we either have the just where I give a talk called One Line, One Standard, One Message, which outlines all this kind of stuff, or we have the Unite the Right trainings, which also two out of the four parts of that are just this on messaging and how to do it. Those are 4 hours. That's an afternoon. And I got to be honest, like the last one I did, people didn't want it to end. They love it because we're not used to thinking this way. We're not used to exploring how we can quickly break down those barriers and have people who thought we were the most hated thing on the planet feel ashamed when they realize we're not that hate, when they realize how hard it is to hate us because we just want them to be freed and to be excellent. Yeah, I mean, really, it's at the end of that last one, like I said, it was 4 hours, and people were just like, no, you know, because it's fun. It's fun to get together and do that. This one we're doing on Saturday is 3 hours, but on Thursday night I'm giving a speech, and that's only for about 30 minutes. So, you know, you tailor it however you do. But that's for young people, so that...
Short
Great. So now you just alienated you alienated all of the old people. Great, nice job, Andy. Way to go. You need to learn your messaging, sir.
That's politically wise to alienate all the old people. Nobody likes them. You're gonna make friends of everybody else. Target a group, get people to hate them with you, and together we can build a political majority.
Better America, or wait, that's Alinsky, right?
It is Alinsky, but you know, but those are they're a lot of fun. It's fun doing that. It's fun exploring how to pick apart an issue, and to do that. It's a lot of fun.
I can't wait until we get to see one of those things like live.
Once he starts filming them,
that'll be a real interesting thing. 3 hours is a long time to film. I get that. You might need to change the batteries on your camera a couple times or find some place to plug it in.
Okay. I've never filmed myself. I would not know. I've never thought of it.
I keep saying you've got to have somebody just pick up key phrases from one of these and make a promo out of it.
That's Instagram all you need. Just take an Instagram video. There you go. Since I'm sure these things are plotted out well in advance, you know when a line is going to get hit. Just upload it to Instagram.
I know somebody who could put Instagram videos together into one video.
Okay.
I know how to do that.
You guys are talking tech stuff. My wife's not here. She went to bed.
Oh.
You're talking to a smart person. She left. The smart one went to bed.
Gotcha. I see how it is. That's why you just went out and ruthlessly attacked old people. It's because Corey isn't here to.
That was for fun.
Oh, that was for fun. Okay, I see.
Yes.
Well, and was he attacking old people or was he just catering to the young?
Otherwise. I'm just gonna say it.
I turned 50. Geez, I turned 51 in just over a week, so.
Well, I'm almost happy birthday. Oh, if it's just over a week, then we'll tell you happy birthday next week. So yes. I take it back. Rewind. Cut.
No happy birthday for you. Not yet.
No happy birthday for you.
1 week. I think we're around that time. At the end of the show, I think so.
Okay, and let's talk some technical. Do you want me to copy and paste the entire chat and put it, like...
I have pulled all four of the major links we've talked about.
You're going to put those on the YouTube page?
I'll put the website. Well, I can't edit the YouTube page, but I think JD can. So
you can edit the YouTube page? You probably can.
Well, we can discuss that off recording. It doesn't really
matter.
I'm going to go ahead and stop the broadcast. That will conclude our show, and then we will talk technical.
The refinery, the first episode.
Yeah, woo! The refinery. Woo! Congratulations,
the first,
everybody.
The first, except really 26.
20 something or other, whatever. It's the
whatever.
First one where we have like
first
a name.
One with a name.
Yeah. And I want to thank everyone who's been listening in on this. You have patience and charm, and I'm sure you're quite good looking because yes. You're listening to us. It makes you beautiful. Okay, so broadcast is going to be over.